What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The hydrocodone bottle found in Eric Richin's nightstand, the one sitting inches from where he died of a fentanyl overdose, that one? It was never tested for fentanyl. Kind of a big deal in a murder case. That fact came out in the Corey Richin's murder trial. And if you're keeping score at home, it should bother you, regardless of which side you're on, because the defense just asked the state's own crime scene technician whether we'd have any way of knowing if fentanyl residue was inside that bottle. And the answer was simple. We wouldn't, because nobody checked. Yeah. Day three of the trial was supposed to be a full day of testimony. It wasn't. What the jury got instead was roughly 40 minutes of cross-examination, a scheduling conflict from the judge, an extended recess that turned into an early dismissal, and a handful of revelations that may end up mattering more than anything we heard in the first 2 days combined. Because defense attorney Kathy Nestor didn't need a full day. She needed less than an hour to start pulling threads. And the prosecution's evidence is already starting to look a little loose at the seams. Here's where we are. Chelsea Gibson is the crime scene investigation technician who served as the evidence hub for the Richin's case. She visited the home 8 different times. She took photos, scans, collected physical evidence. She was there the morning Eric Richin's died. She was there a month later. She was there after Corey was arrested in May of 2023. On day two, the prosecution walked her through all of it. Carefully, methodically building their foundation, the prescription bottles, the phones, the THC edibles, a pair of tweezers found in a woman's jacket pocket. The prosecutors made a point of entering into evidence, though nobody's explained why yet. Gibson was steady, professional, the kind of witness the state wants up front, someone who documents the scene and lets the physical evidence do the talking. Then the defense got their turn, and Nestor went straight for the gaps. She started with the bed sheet. There was a sheet from the bed still in evidence. With some blood on it, Gibson confirmed she kept it because, in her words, it was where he died on, is how she put it. But here's the context the defense wants the jury to hear. Corey pulled Eric off the bed using that sheet because 911 dispatchers told her to perform CPR, and he was heavier than her. She was following emergency instructions. The scene around Eric's body wasn't staged. It was disturbed in real time by a woman trying to save her husband's life. At least that's what the defense wants you to sit with. Then came the wallet. In one photo of the nightstand, there's a wallet. In an earlier photo, it's not there. Gibson acknowledged it had been moved from the kitchen and placed on the nightstand. Nestor pressed, could anything underneath it have been contaminated by placing an item from another room on top of it? Gibson didn't seem concerned, but the point wasn't really about the wallet. The point was about establishing that items were being moved around the crime scene and that the documentation doesn't always tell you the full story of what was where and when. And these could be totally innocent moves. Who is he? Let's get his ID. That sort of thing. Because you're not necessarily thinking it's murder in the moment. That's when Nestor started getting into the heavier stuff. No photos were taken of the kitchen. The prosecutor's theory of this case is that Corey Richens put fentanyl into a Moscow mule she made for her husband. That drink allegedly killed him, and the kitchen where that drink was allegedly prepared was not photographed by the lead crime scene technician. Neither was the sink, the place where the glass might have been rinsed, where residue might have been found, where the most critical physical evidence of the state's entire theory of the crime could have existed. Nobody pointed a camera at it. Gibson said she took photos of one side of the closet, but not the kitchen. You can draw your own conclusions about what that says about investigative priorities or skill level. Nestor kept building. She asked about drug paraphernalia. Were there any vape pens, baggies, anything that would suggest illicit drug use in the home? Or sandwich containment. Baggies, you know. Gibson confirmed there were none found on the day Eric died, and Nestor asked a question that seemed simple but carried a lot of weight. Is it possible for someone to store illicit drugs inside old prescription pill bottles? What a question. Gibson said yes, it's possible. She was familiar with people doing exactly that. We talked about that on the show just the other day. So now you got two ideas sitting side by side in the jury's mind. No paraphernalia was found, and illicit drugs can be hidden in plain sight inside bottles that look perfectly legal. The implication being that Eric could have had access to fentanyl on his own, and the investigation, as conducted, wouldn't necessarily have caught it. There was beer in the basement fridge. Woo! Liquor bottles in the downstairs kitchen. Wah! THC gummies stored up high where the kids couldn't reach them. Wah! Nestor pushed on whether all of it was documented, photographed, and cataloged. Gibson couldn't always confirm it was. The picture Nestor is painting isn't about any single failure. It's about accumulation. Each gap on its own does not mean much. But stacked together, one after another, the message starts to become harder to ignore. The investigation decided what mattered early, and it may not have looked hard enough at the things it didn't find to fit the narrative. And then came the moment nobody in that courtroom saw coming. Nestor was asking Gibson about phone calls between Corey and her family, and this is where the day took a turn, kind of veered it off the rails, and never came back. Specifically, whether Gibson had been downloading those recordings on a weekly basis. The jail calls is what they are, in reality. Routine questions seemingly aimed at establishing how evidence was collected, but Gibson's response whacked the whole thing open. Because here's the thing. Image and understanding of the defendant is important in any sort of case. And before trial, through motions and decisions, it is decided whether or not we're going to tell the jury if this person's been in jail. Have they been, or have they been free? Jury doesn't know the answer to that question. Until a question, an innocent question, arises in court, which is exactly what this was. Nestor asking Gibson about phone calls between Corey and her family, specifically whether Gibson had been downloading those recordings on a weekly basis. Routine, kind of housekeeping-esque question. She said out loud in front of the jury, "Are you talking about jail calls?" Nestor immediately moved to strike. Sidebar, the judge pulled both attorneys aside. When things resumed, Judge Marzik instructed the jury not to speculate or discuss whether the defendant was in custody or has been in custody at any time, which is legally the right move. But practically, 12 people just heard a prosecution witness casually connect the defendant to jail. That bell doesn't unring. And the strange part is, it happened during the defense's own cross, meaning Nestor's question inadvertently opened the door to exactly the kind of prejudicial information defense teams spent entire careers trying to keep out. I'm sure Nestor's a lovely person. I really do. Seems nice. Seems like be fun. If you're not watching the trial, you're just kind of getting information from us or whoever about what's going on. Picture if Phyllis from The Office had a sister that was an attorney. That's Nestor. lovely person. You can tell, you know, they're okay at their job. They mean well. They have good intent. Their heart's where it should be. But, you know, it's Phyllis. You love her, but you're like, I don't know that I would want Phyllis representing me in a murder case. That's my ethereal take on the attorney. It's not horrible. I've seen far worse, but also not necessarily, in my opinion, smooth sailing. It cuts both ways, though. The fact that Gibson's mind went straight to jail calls tells you something about how the state's team think about Corey Richens, not as a defendant presumed innocent, not as someone whose guilt hasn't been established, as an inmate. The kind of casual association might not be admissible, but it is revealing. And all these little nuggets, should Corey Richens be found guilty? Well, that little ditty in court right there, That's things you bring up on appellate. That's an appellate issue. Is it strong enough for her to get a new trial? Probably not on its own. But again, this is a case where it's built on a lot of little things. And we are 3 days into this. That's supposed to go for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, somewhere around there. Things can stack. After all of that, and we're talking about roughly 40 minutes of actual testimony, Judge Marzik announced he had a scheduling conflict and called for an hour recess. That hour stretched, and when court reconvened, the judge told everyone an unforeseen circumstance had come up. The jury was dismissed for the day. Gibson will be back on the stand. That was day three of the Corey Richens murder trial, lasting barely longer than a lunch break. And yet what happened in that narrow window may have shifted the trajectory of the case more than anything that came before it. Here's just becoming clear about the defense strategy. Nestor is not trying to prove who killed Eric Richens. He's trying to prove that the investigation can't tell you with certainty how he died the way the prosecution says he did. An untested hydrocodone bottle, an unphotographed kitchen, no drug paraphernalia, moved evidence, incomplete documentation. This isn't a whodunit defense. This is a did they even look defense. And in a case built largely on circumstantial evidence, the caps in that investigation don't just create reasonable doubt. They are the reasonable doubt. Nestor was clearly building towards something today. She was stacking these revelations methodically, each one slightly more damaging than the last. And she got cut short by a judge's scheduling conflict and an unexplained disruption. She'll have to pick it all back up. Not ideal. Momentum matters in a courtroom, and the rhythm of a cross-examination is a real thing, but the facts she surfaced aren't going anywhere. That untested bottle will still be untested. The kitchen will still be unphotographed, and the jury will still have an extra night to sit on all of it. The prosecution spent the entire day carefully walking Gibson through the evidence they collected. The defense needed less than an hour to start making the evidence look incomplete. That's the story. And the trial is just getting started. Give me your thoughts in the comments section. As this all continues, where do you think it's at so far? How big of a mistake was that? Is that damning? Obviously, yes, those words, I guess, could taint a jury. They're going to put her in a light that she might be incarcerated, had been incarcerated, is incarcerated, all of that. It matters. It does matter. Even ever so slightly, is it such a critical error that it would change a verdict? Well, we haven't gotten to a verdict, but that would be a question on appellate that could be asked later. It's like if this is a game of Monopoly, they just got a chance card. We don't know what's on it, but they got a chance card, and they can use it at some point in the game. Maybe. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Maybe you hold on to that card for the very end. Or really hold on to that card and hope, maybe I can use this in another game. It's going to be an interesting judgment call. Your thoughts in the comments on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe as well, wherever you're listening to this, so you don't miss any of our reporting on this and the many cases we're following for you right here. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it may be. Hit subscribe. I do greatly appreciate that. All right, we'll talk more in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi, and we'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.